today we are going to continue with the next part of Susie and the Ballet Family by Lee Wyndham. And we are going to read chapters 11 and 12 today. Are you ready? Okay, good. Here we go. Chapter 11, Lightning and Thunder. Pudgy Mr. Morton Shaw must have flown all the way. He arrived so quickly from his office downstairs. He hurried breathlessly into the little ballroom, evidently much disturbed by John Marlowe's telephone call. Now, he said soothingly, what's all the trouble here? Surely we can straighten everything out, Miss Allard? He rubbed his hands together, eyeing her anxiously. There is nothing to straighten out, Allegra said coldly. I merely wish to tell you that Allard and Marlowe are resigning. It has become impossible for us to fulfill the balance of this engagement. Oh, come now, Morton Shaw said, aghast. I'm counting on you to finish off the season here with a bang. You can't do this to me. We not only can, but we will, Allegra said. I have never been put into such a fantastic position before. I, Allegra Allard, being dictated to by a child and spoiled, badly trained one at that. Oh, these artistic temperaments, Mr. Morton muttered under his breath. And just who is the culprit? He asked, glancing around the room, at Susie, at Bob, finally at April. Why, April, honey, I didn't see you when I came in, he said. Oh, Daddy, April wailed and rushed into his arms in a flood of tears. There's your answer, Allegra said, pointing imperiously. April has been an annoyance ever since we came here. But that's impossible, Mr. Shaw protested. She's a dear sweet child. Besides, she's going to be a ballerina someday. She's been training for years. Mistraining, you mean? Allegra snapped. April has been taught by some monster utterly without conscience. All her muscles are developed in the wrong places. She was put on tow much too early, and her vanity has been fed and pampered to a ridiculous degree. Mr. Shaw pushed April away from him a little and stared at her, then at Allegra. Are you talking about my daughter? He asked incredulously. His face got very red, and his jaw jutted out angrily. Yes, I am, Allegra said, her voice suddenly calm and controlled. And it is high time I did. I should have pointed out some things to you in the beginning, and then maybe this would not have happened. But what exactly has happened? Mr. Shaw demanded, his eyes snapping. He held April protectively in his arms. Both he and Allegra seemed to have forgotten the presence of the others in the ballroom, Susie thought uncomfortably. Ever since we've been here, Allegra said, April has sashayed in and out of the little ballroom during our practice periods. Her mother said it was all right for her to watch us, she said. We let that pass. We even watched her dance. It was obvious at once that she had been badly taught. Her posture is poor. Her hips are out of place. She bends her knees instead of holding her legs straight. She does not pull her weight up properly. It is all on her toes. April was allowed to dance on toe much too early in her training. She rolls on her arches instead of keeping her weight on the outside of the feet. Oh, dozens of things like that. Mr. Shaw, as a result of poor training by an incompetent teacher, your daughter is well on her way to being a cripple. Mr. Shaw's anger seemed to evaporate. Some of the color left his face and he stared at Allegra, quite frightened by what she said. Are you sure of this? He asked. Have April's feet examined by a doctor, and he will bear me out, she said seriously. We tried to correct some of her faults, or at least tell her about them, but she would not listen. Then her mother thought we should put April in one of our numbers. Allegra began pacing up and down the floor. To keep things pleasant, we thought about it at any rate, she continued, and we hit on the idea of doing the second act from the Nutcracker. It seemed like a fine opportunity to use all of the children at the hotel who had been taking ballet lessons. But what happens then? Mr. Shaw shook his head mechanically, more concerned now with his daughter than with the show. April objects to our choreography, to her part, to her costume. Really, Mr. Shaw, this is too much. I've had enough. I'm through. That's all. April, sit over there, Mr. Shaw said, nervously pointing to a chair against the wall. The girl walked to it meekly and sat down, looking stunned. Her father turned to Allegra Allard. Why didn't you tell me of this before? It seems now that I don't know anything about my daughter. I'm a businessman. This hotel, my other ventures demand all my time. I leave child-raising to my wife. I know she's ambitious for April, but I had no idea how out of all proportion the whole thing had gotten. Please, Miss Allard, I'll do whatever you think is right about April. I am horrified to hear that those expensive ballet lessons have ruined her chances at the career she wants, rather than helped her. That is not so, Allegra said quickly. April can be retrained. It would take patience, and she must have a fine, honest teacher who really knows her business. During all this exchange of words, April sat haunched on the bench, looking more and more scared. Susie began to feel sorry for her. But now April perked up a bit. You mean it's not too late? Her father asked Allegra. No, April is very young. If she really wants to dance, she can be helped. But she must change her attitude. Oh, Miss Allard, it was April, wailing as if her heart would break. I'm sorry. Really, truly, I am. I want so much to be a dancer. She ran over to Allegra and clung to her hands. All at once, Allegra's irritation melted. She put her arms around the weeping girl, stroking the long, shining hair. Hush now, hush, she said softly, over and over. Would you recommend a teacher for April? Mr. Shaw asked. Allegra gazed at him steadily. Yes, she said at last, I will. And what about the end of the season show? We've been releasing publicity on it. Allegra glanced at her husband and at Bob, consulting them. Then she nodded. All right, Mr. Shaw, we'll go on with it. The hotel man sighed relief. Of course, he said sadly to himself. April will not be part of it. Allegra's arms tightened about the girl. Oh, yes, she said. April will be in it, in the part of Princess Clara, just as it stands, with a simple pas de deux with her partner. I think she can carry that off quite well. And in the fall, we'll see to it that she gets proper retraining. You may go now, April, but be back tomorrow promptly at 9 and bring Charlotte with you. Oh, Miss Allard, April gasped. Thank you, thank you. She left with her father, and for a moment there was complete silence in the ballroom. They were all like carved statues, Susie thought. And then Miss Prissy Sims' hands came down hard on the piano keys in great crashing chords, after which she played a spirited rhapsody, her fingers flying over the keys. It was exactly the right thing to do, for when she stopped, the air had cleared of anger and tensions. Whew, Susie said weakly. Whew, me too, Bob exhaled noisily. Mom, you certainly told them off, he said admiringly. Somebody had to, Allegra shrugged, weary now after the ordeal. You couldn't have made a better choice, John Marlowe remarked. It was rough, but necessary. He kissed his wife on the forehead. Let's all go for a dip, he suggested. And then Susie and Bob were going to work on that Spanish number of yours. Swell, Bob shouted. Come, Señorita Susana. It was all suddenly normal and right. Susie laughed, happily. The Nutcracker was safe and sure again, and summer was deliciously wonderful still. Chapter 12, When Neptune Strikes. April was a different girl from then on. She listened attentively to all instruction. She did her best to please Allegra, and she followed the ballerina with her eyes like an adoring puppy. I don't believe anyone ever spoke honestly to her before in all her life, Allegra said one day. No wonder she had such delusions of grandeur. But now I'm actually getting so I like her. Susie suffered a pang of jealousy. It must have showed plainly on her face, for Allegra reached out and pulled her close, laughing gently. Susie gazed up into her beautiful, understanding face, and in a moment she, too, was laughing. Now who's acting spoiled? She asked, and scampered off toward the portable bar where Robin Ann Palmer was practicing. Meanwhile, costumes were being cut and fitted. A storeroom was converted into a sewing room, and there machines whirred all day. Busy ladies went around with pins in their mouths, trailing yards of ribbon, silk, and satin, and net. Susie loved to peek in all this activity, to smell the fresh newness of the cloth, to watch the frothy tutus taking shape under skillful fingers, bright candy cane suits, gay as Easter eggs, and all the other shining costumes. Mr. Shaw had engaged scene designers to transform the large stage at the back of the banquet hall into the luscious palace of the Sugar Plum Fairy. Before long, the painted scenery appeared good enough to eat. The clever designers had even fashioned a charming walnut boat, which was to bring Clara and the prince to Fairyland. For a moment, Susie almost wished that she was playing the part of Clara, just to ride in that darling little walnut shell. Special seats were brought over in great vans, and the banquet hall was transformed into a theater large enough to fit in several hundred people. Of course, those staying at the hotel had first chance to get tickets for the performance, but outsiders, too, were admitted. It was going to be a gala show. "We must even have a few dance critics in from New York," Allegra said. "Mr. Shaw has been giving our efforts terrific publicity." "I saw a note about our Nutcracker in Dance Magazine," Bob remarked. "Oh," Susie said, "I'm getting nervous." "That's as it should be," Allegra nodded. "You'll be fine once the show begins." The Nutcracker was to be given on the last Saturday in August, and as the days drew close to this special evening, rehearsals were intensified. Each girl was drilled in her part with extra care. Susie and Bob helped in whatever way they could. "April has been so good about everything," Allegra said. "I've even allowed her to have the pink costume she longed for, so." "She looks lovely, and Charlotte makes an elegant prince in that powder blue velvet." "I can hardly wait for dress rehearsal to see just how it all will go, and how we will all look," Susie sighed longingly. "I wish it were here now." And after dress rehearsal on Friday morning, she said, "Oh, I can hardly wait till we give the show. It really is darling. I wish I could see it from the front and be in it, too." "Wish, wish, wish," Bob teased. "Your name should be Susie Wish Peters Can Hardly Wait." "Oh, you," Susie giggled at this picture of herself. "I don't see how you can be so calm." "I'm not really," Bob confessed. "I've seen dozens and dozens of shows produced that Mother and Dad have been in, and I'm excited and nervous about each one, even though they're always wonderful." "I can hardly wait," Susie began, but darting a sparkling glance at Bob, she clapped her hands to her mouth. "All right, Susie," Bob said. "You win. I can hardly wait, too. So while we're both can hardly waiting, let's go for a dip. It's breezy today, and the breakers are really whoppers. Hurry up and get your swimsuit." "All right. I'll run over to the crow's nest," Susie said. They met on the beach, midway between the cottage and the Neptune Palace. "I think we'd better use the hotel beach where they have lifeguards," Bob said. "The ocean is mighty rough. So we'll hang on to the ropes while we're surf bathing." "Pooh," Susie scoffed. "I'm used to the big waves now. They don't knock me around the way they did at first." "Just the same, you're to hold on. Come along, I'll race you." They dashed into the swirling surf and soon were screaming happily as they clung to the thick ropes, standing chest high in the water. "Jump," Bob shouted. "Here comes a big wave, as big as a whale." Up, 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 Susie rose as the wave swelled under her, passed on beyond, and allowed her feet to settle on the sandy bottom again. Wham! The wave crashed to the beach, boiling out in white froth, which hurried to flow back into the sea. Again and again, Susie and Bob rode the waves. It was such fun. "I'll miss all this," Susie said, "when we go back home, even with Miss Mara's ballet school starting up again." "By then, it will be too cold for ocean dips anyway," Bob comforted her. "Susie! Susie!" Robin Palmer was calling from the beach, but the boom of the surf was too loud. Neither Bob nor Susie heard the little girl. "Susie!" Robin shouted. "Susie! Miss Allard wants you! Susie!" "Oh, she doesn't hear." It was useless to try to shout over the waves. Robin said, "I'll have to go out and get her." She kicked off her sandals and ran into the water. "Sue!" she began, when a huge comber seemed to rise out of nowhere. It hung poised above her and then crashed down on the small girl, sending her tumbling end over end under the water. "Oh!" Susie had turned toward the shore just in time to see Robin go down under the weight of the wave. "Bob!" she screamed, horrified. But Bob had seen Robin at the same instant. "I'll get her!" he shouted, moving swiftly along the ropes. Susie started to move beachward, too. She became so worried about little Robin, she forgot to hold on. A wave, larger even than the one that had crashed over Robin, towered above her. Before Susie realized this, she was toppled down under it, choking on the bitter salt water. It was a dreadful sensation, this being tossed and tumbled, trying to get hold of something, and clawing at nothing. Suppose there was an undertow. She might be pulled out to sea. Susie had never been so frightened in her life. And then her head went thunk as it struck a hard object, and she didn't feel a thing after that. When Susie floated out of the velvety darkness, she saw the blue sky. Someone was bending over her. Susie turned her head from side to side. She seemed to be lying in a circle of people's legs, which stood about her like a fence. "What?" Susie coughed. "Good, she's coming around," somebody said. Susie coughed again. A blanket was wrapped around her more snugly. A tall, bronzed lifeguard was squatting beside her, watching her. Next to him, Bob was kneeling on the sand, his face pale and anxious. "Gosh, Sue, you had me scared," he exclaimed. Susie suddenly remembered something. "Where's Robin?" she asked fearfully. "Here I am," Robin piped up and scrambled forward through the crowd. "I'm all right." "My goodness," Susie said groggily, trying to sit up. "I thought you were... Gosh, what did happen?" "Well, you sure gave us some awful moments," Bob told her. "I went after Robin, but a lifeguard had spotted her and had just had her out before I'd taken three steps. I looked back just in time to see you banged down by the biggest wave I've ever seen. So I dove in after you. The lifeguard passed Robin on to someone else to take out. She was all right, and he dove in too. You were one limp bundle when this young man fished you up from the bottom," the lifeguard said. "You must have hit your head hard on something, and it took quite a bit of work to get the water out of you. How do you feel?" "All right, I guess," Susie said, "but my head hurts. Those waves are strong and kind of mean." "That's why we have ropes," the guard said pointedly. "I know," Susie admitted. "Well, we'd better get you home. A day or two in bed will fix you up. The bump on the back of your head isn't bad." "A day or two in bed?" Susie yelped. "What about the nutcracker?" "Huh?" The guard frowned, eyeing Susie narrowly. "She's in that show up at the hotel," Bob explained. "Oh," the guard was relieved. "I thought maybe she'd been hit harder than we figured." "I don't know about your show, young lady. All I'm concerned with now is seeing to it that you get home. It's up to your folks from then on." He scooped her up in powerful arms as if she were a baby. "I'll run on ahead," Bob said, "and tell your mother there's nothing to worry about when she sees the guard bringing you home." But Susie scarcely heard him. Would she be able to dance tomorrow? Suppose she couldn't. That would be the awfulest thing that had ever happened to her. Absolutely the awfulest. And that's the end of chapter 12. I hope you enjoyed that part of the story. It got a little scary there for a minute. I like the ocean. And I'm glad that Susie and Robin are okay. All right, that's it for this time. I love you, sweetie. Good night.